From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of June 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at the commodity markets and the trade in Chicago at the CME Group with Jackie Vakes and explore what's been happening around the planet as well. She's with Stuart Peterson. We'll also take a look at the weather across the planet with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, and we'll update you on all the agricultural news for the afternoon right here on this ag programming that comes from the University of Illinois, Illinois Public Media, and U of I Extension. Find us online at willag.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished in Chicago at the CME Group. July corn today at $4.30, finished 2 1/4 higher. September $4.38 1/4, up 2 cents. In December, up a penny and a half at $4.48 1/2. March $4.56 1/4, 3/4 of a cent higher. Next year's July at $4.60 1/4, down 1/2 cent. Soybeans up 18 3/4 today, $8.78 the settlement price. September at $8.91 3/4, 18 1/2 higher. November up 18 1/2 cents at $9.05 1/2, in January, $9.17 3/4 up 17 1/2, as the trade expecting an awful lot of rainfall that could delay the soybean planting and potentially push it into failed or prevent plant acres as well. July bean oil 34 cents higher at $27.56, the bean meal at $3.19.50. $5.10 higher. Wheat futures, July contract at $5.26 1/4, up 8 1/4. December there at $5.42 1/4, 10 1/4 higher. And July hard red winter wheat finished at $4.62 3/4, up 5 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures, June contract at $109.65, $1.02 1/2 cents lower on the day. The August down $1.62 1/2. It settled at $105.20 for the afternoon. August feeder cattle at $137.80 per 100 pounds, down 32 1/2 cents. September at $138.60 lower, and lean hogs in the June contract a nickel higher at $79.02 1/2. July $84.37 1/2, unchanged on the day. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org, willag.org. You can always find us in Google Play, the iTunes Store, though I'm still working on getting that link picked back up again. It will come, I promise. Also, you can find us in Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and many, many other places, including the NPR One app. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for being with us. What were your thoughts when you saw yesterday morning's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates?
I'm sure the first thoughts that most everybody had, you know, you looked at the 166 and you looked at the 3 million drop in acreage, and you go, wow, you know, that's something. Why isn't corn up 20? You know, I mean, that's basically, I think, could probably sum up the way most people feel. I think it was wise on the part of the USDA to come out and make some of those moves this year, just because of the fact that instead of coming along and just slamming it in the ground, in a later report, and we know the June report more than likely is going to overstate corn acres because that comes from that first week in June. And, you know, we don't know how many guys are going to plant right to the end of the insurance date. Perhaps it's going on. We know that. And so I think that's one of the reasons that the market is kind of tepid when it comes to the corn, because until they can see, on a crop progress report that we're really pretty much done in most places, they're not going to get all as excited as maybe a lot of people would like to see them be. But I think that they made a good choice in doing that. The thing I looked at, FarmDoc did the Illinois corn seminars this morning, and basically I think that it's interesting, if you put in your mind, if we have a total loss of 7 million acres of corn, they still only have a $5 average. And so I think a lot of people would think if that were the case, you know, we'd have a $6.50 average. But it has a long-term impact. You know, higher prices make for a tougher situation. And the bean part of it is extremely interesting, I think, from the standpoint that, you know, we didn't really make any acreage changes at all. If we lose a couple million acres, You know, it's likely we'll probably have an average price of 785. I mean, that's lower than where we are right now. I'm sure partially because of tariffs and partially because of the announcement saying that they're going to try and help the bean farmer who may not be able to plant also fall in underneath the umbrella of this support program that's coming out due to the tariffs. So I think that for, you know, for a June report, it was a pretty interesting report, Todd, compared to most. You know, it was something else. And you know, you look at the world numbers and, you know, they reflected only about a half as much loss as what we experienced on our report. And so that tells me that other countries are expected to pick up some of the slack in the production on that too and make it available. I mean, we know from years past that we've seen corn come in from South America. We've seen all kinds of things happen.
Now, on that report, of course, they dropped planted acreage by a bit more than 3 million for corn. Can you put that into context with the planting intentions report? Because the two work hand in hand, and it's just they represent more acres than maybe people expect.
Well, you know, one of the things about you know, I look and yeah, this is from being old and being around for a long time, Todd, but you know, yes, over the years I've learned through observation, you know, that whenever we come out with the first numbers in February, you know, we're always missing at least 2 million, if not sometimes as many as 4 million acres when you compare it to total acreage planted from the year before. And so as we go through this, we have to recognize that, you know, there's a number built in there that already represents lost acres. And it makes sense when you think about it, because, you know, when you look at this year, river bottom land is not a reliable producer. And so therefore, I think that it is judicious to basically build in a number that says this could be the way it is. And so that's why I think people sometimes are very upset, you know, because they just think, oh, my gosh, well, how did we end up with this many more acres than what they thought we were going to have? Well, it's because we either were able to plant more of those acres that were built in there as prevent plant, or we lose more prevent plant, but we don't lose as large a chunk as what they think because some is already built in. And so I think it's a really good way to handle the whole thing in general.
So that's when you get to the June acreage report, or like, where did the extra acres come from? They may have been just there, but as failed acres in some sort, and came back into the planting situation. Now let's come back to some of the things that are happening in the market right now. We always go through the support and resistance numbers. What do they look like this week?
Well, I'm using July and December weekly numbers, except if I have a gap sitting there, which I do have a gap on July at 404 and three quarters. And that's support, 381, and then 351. Resistance in July, 438. 450 is a psychological resistance. 475 is then weekly resistance. We look at December, 433 and a quarter, 420 and 398 for support. And then resistance, 450, 489, and of course, psychological, $5. July, beans, 855 is support, 830 and 771. Resistance, 895, 922, and 933. And in November, we're looking at 897 as support, 882, and 868. Resistance at 921, 962, and then 987. So, you know, it's really interesting how quickly it changes, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you bet it is. Hey, other things are impacting the market besides the weather this week. The export inspections. Are they a limiting factor?
I would say yes. You know, we've gone from being ahead on corn on inspections. Now we're 1% behind. Beans were 16.5% behind. And wheat has actually fallen off, and it's now 5% behind. And so, you know, those are tough things. Now, all right, when I say that on corn, that we're 1% behind, we have to remember that the number that I'm looking at here, these are numbers where it's shipped out by boat. If you look into the numbers that we finally have for rail going across into Mexico, we're really not quite, we're still above even, but we're still struggling along here. So, I mean, I looked back not that long ago, and well, back in March, we were 32% ahead. And so, you know, it has done very much like we talked. You know, we front loaded a tremendous amount, and now we've just dwindled down, almost following the same pattern that we followed last year, you know, when it came to beans. We saw that same thing happen. And so, yes, I think it's kind of an albatross around the neck of the corn market at this point in time.
Where's the managed money placing its bets today?
Well, right now they're short 7,000 contracts of soft red, long 93,000 contracts of corn, short 114,000 contracts of beans. They're long 3,000 of soy meal and short 64,000 on soy oil. Soy oil has just never, it just can't seem to climb itself out of that hole of being short all the time. But it looks to me like, you know, we've got spreading going on. We've got the buying of corn and selling of beans, at least in the managed money part of it. And that's not a surprise because nobody really knows what's going to happen. You know, the weather this week reminds me more of spring weather than it does heading into close to, you know, the summer changeover. And so, I don't know, it's really going to be an interesting marketing year.
What do we have from around the globe that we should discuss today?
Well, here's something that's a little scary, I guess. Maybe not so scary to some of our guys, but Brazil's soy industry, ABIV, said that they're thinking that there might be as much as a 50% reduction in financing to farmers for new crop, which would be 1920. And it's primarily because of defaults and bankruptcy protections. And so, you know, I know that our guys were just jealous as all get out of those guys down there because they were getting such big money for their, you know, for their beans because of the fact that we put the tariffs in place, but they're not doing any better than anybody else. I can tell you that. And so this leads a lot of times, you know, when you see the traditional financing go away, I think a part of bankruptcy probably too, and some of the defaults are coming because it used to be that they could go to, you know, your major grain suppliers and get money for them by pledging what they were going to produce. But, you know, your major grain suppliers don't know what to even use for a number down there because they still don't have their freight situation straightened out. And so it is just one gigantic mess. It's like a big ball rolling down a hill that by the time it gets to the bottom is going to swallow up a lot of people at the rate that it's going. And so it's very unstable.
Anything else before I let you go?
Well, I think it's interesting. China's consumer inflation hit a 15-month high in May, and I'm certain that that is not, they're not happy about that. 26% of that was fresh fruit prices, and they went up 9% compared to April. Pork prices went up another almost 4%. They're at 18.2% up over a year ago, and so, you know, the squeeze is on. Let's just put it that way, and it's gonna be interesting. This might move them a little bit to be able to be a little more sincere about their talks, but got to figure out a way to make them feel like they won. You know, if that's the case, then I think everything gets settled. But until then, no dice.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, here are the next steps for the Trade Aid Package, or MFP 2.0. Lawmakers peppered USDA Undersecretary Ted McKinney, as we heard yesterday during this report, with questions about the Trump administration's new trade relief program for farmers. Ted McKinney, Undersecretary, says there are $16 billion in the package that are currently under review by the Office of Management and Budget, or the OMB. You might recall that Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue blamed OMB's bean counters, quote, including Director Mick Mulvaney, who is now President Donald Trump's acting chief of staff, for holding up last year's trade aid package. McKinney indicated the new payments to farmers could be based on multiple years of production levels. We have changed how that's calculated. It's not just a one-year look back. It's looking back over several years, he said. That would fit with USDA's efforts to avoid influencing farmers' decisions about which crops to grow. Congress has tried for years to make farm subsidies more market-based by tying them to historical acreage and yields. Front-loading the farm payments, here's one of the things that's important. USDA has said that the $14.5 billion in direct aid will be doled out in three batches. The first round will begin by early August, and the other two will follow later this year if trade conditions do not improve. McKinney said he expects the first tranche will be heavier because of the immediate need. Well, let's stay with the Trump administration and agriculture, but we'll switch to the president's visit to Iowa yesterday. Mr. Trump toured an ethanol plant and talked up the new rule recently finalized by EPA that will allow year-round sales of 15% ethanol, a long-sought victory by the state's many corn growers and biofuels backers. He also touted his deregulatory moves and promised that his trade policies will eventually pay off for farmers with new market access abroad. Now, speaking of which, that Mexico ag trade deal that's supposed to be part of the immigration negotiation remains mysterious. If you're looking for details about the large quantities of U.S. farm goods that Mr. Trump promised Mexico would immediately begin buying, don't ask his primary agricultural trade officials. Undersecretary McKinney, who we talked about earlier in our broadcast, and Greg Dowd, who's the USTR's chief ag negotiator, both told Congress on Tuesday they do not have any information on such a deal. There is, however, details on a different order that the president put forward, this one an executive order, along with a new proposed USDA regulation that would help speed up the approval and availability of new biotech crops. Gary Crawford has more on it with the president.
Farmers are not only promoting our prosperity, you are protecting our security as a nation.
President Trump at an ethanol plant in Iowa Tuesday talking about year-round sales of E15, also trade deals, disaster help for farmers, and other subjects. Also, the president signed
an executive order to speed up reviews of biotechnology so that farmers can get access to critical scientific advances faster and reap the full benefit for many years into the future.
In conjunction with that order, the USDA last week issued proposed new regulations for how new biotech crops would be evaluated for safety and approved for use. Regulations which Undersecretary of Agriculture Greg Ibaugh said in conjunction with the executive order would strike a balance between
efficiency as well as an appropriate regulatory oversight mechanism.
He said under current rules, it can take 5 to 7 years for a new biotech crop to be approved. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And finally today, almost 1,000 farm and food groups have written congressional leaders to ratify the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement in a clear move to step up pressure to get the job done. The letter to the top leaders of the House and Senate urging USMCA approval probably has more signatures than any letter of its kind in recent memory, says the House Livestock Subcommittee Chairman Jim Costa.
Over 900 agriculture organizations throughout the country supporting the United States, Mexico-Canada agreement on trade, and without objection, we will submit it for the record.
It is unclear if Congress can come to an agreement on passing the USMCA. And that's a look at today's Ag News. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Hope everything's going good over on your side of the fence.
Well, if you could keep the rains from not coming, although I think there may be a few places that want to rain on a crop that's been in the ground. We still need to put some soybeans in at this point. What do you see for the Midwest?
Well, unfortunately, I do see us ramping up on the rainfall as we go forward through this coming week, and that is going to be a real problem potentially for some folks because obviously we're trying to get down to the wire here and get this crop in the ground. The good news is that there will be some breaks in the rain, but it's not very long breaks, and we're not really as warm as we ought to be in order to make some good drying progress between events. So it looks to me like from Kansas and maybe parts of Iowa into Ohio and Michigan, those areas are probably not going to see a lot of ideal weather for more than a day at a time. between now and probably the latter part of next week. So maybe get two or three breaks in there, but a single day of drying is not going to be enough given the environment that we're in right now. So starting this weekend, I'm afraid that the conditions will be deteriorating in those eastern areas to the point where it'll be a real challenge to try to get done, I think, on time here.
That is too bad. I take it the southeast will continue to get a little rainfall, which they have needed desperately as well.
Yes, and their soil moisture profile has improved greatly because of the rains that have fallen in the past week. They are expected to turn drier biased again as we move deeper into this month and especially in July. So this is a very important rainfall for them. But they are seeing enough improvement there that, yes, I think they've turned the corner, at least for now.
Canadian prairies, what are conditions like there?
That is a very serious situation there. There are some areas in Saskatchewan and neighboring areas of east central and southeastern Alberta that are literally teetering on withering and actual loss of production for this year. It is so dry up that way. The temperatures have not been as hot this week as they were last week, which has really helped a lot. The good news for them, I suppose, is that there is at least some scattering of showers that will occur as we go forward through this next 5 days, and that will help to limit the potential for widespread losses in this week. I'm hoping, and I think I'm correct, that this shower activity is going to be priming the pump for their rainfall, hopefully, and that next week we'll have a better opportunity for more organized rain. I'm being told that some of the crop has already been lost there, and certainly the production potential in canola and some of their wheat country has definitely come down. They're way off of their potential for seeing a high-yielding crop. But at this point, they just want to keep the crop alive. So we're hoping that the rain that's going to evolve over the next 10 days will be sufficient for rescuing a large part of that crop. But it is a very tenuous situation and one that needs to be closely monitored.
Around the other side of the world, in the Black Sea area, how are conditions for crops?
Yeah, there's a dry problem over there as well. From eastern parts of Ukraine into Kazakhstan, including a large part of Russia's southern region, that area there is quite dry and getting drier. They've had a lot of 80 and lower 90-degree temperatures this week. It hasn't rained in that area for a while, and there's not much rain in the pipeline for the next 10 days, maybe longer than that for some of this region. The temperatures will stay warm, maybe not quite as hot as they have been, but they'll stay warm, and so the moisture situation will continue to go downward. Their corn and soybeans are produced in that area, as well as some others, but that is a very important area for those two crops, and so obviously there's going to be a little pressure on the yield potentials there if this lasts too much longer. From a spring wheat perspective, there's some crop there that also could be negatively impacted by this. A lot of the wheat is grown just a little bit farther to the north where subsoil moisture is still favorable, and so I'm not expecting the impact to be quite as great on the small grains as it may be on those coarse grain and oil seeds.
Hey, thanks so much, and you have a good week.
All right, you do the same.
Hey, I will, and thanks so much. That's Drew Lerner, of course. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You can find us online at willag.org and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address, willag.org.